ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Arts in 30, your weekly wrap of global news in arts and culture. Daniel Browning with you. Many Australian authors have found out that their work may have been used by tech giant Meta to train its AI model without their permission or any attempt to gain that permission. Coming up later in the show, we'll look at the impacts of AI on the book industry and how authors can protect themselves from copyright infringement on this massive, unprecedented scale. And a first for the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. The winner of the Children's Prize for Literature also took out the overall prize for literature. You'll meet the Nookal Wurra writer and artist, Aunty Wanda Gibson, very soon. But first, the headlines with Skye Kirkham. Skye. Now, new details have emerged about the use of copyrighted material by AI companies.
Yes, court documents released from a case between a number of American authors and Meta have revealed the scale of the company's use of books and research papers in training their large language model, Llama 3, entirely without the author's or publisher's permission. From reporting in The Atlantic, Meta researchers commented that licensing books and research papers for use by their systems was, quote, unreasonably expensive, incredibly slow, and a director of engineering noted that people don't realize that if we license one single book, we won't be able to lean into fair use strategy. So, rather than obtaining permission and licensing from consenting authors, Meta appears to have lent into that strategy, arguing in court that it's fair use to train their generative AI models on copyrighted work without a license, because LLMs transform the original material into new work. Or, in simpler words, they decided to take the work and hope nobody stops them. The company's researchers, after obtaining permission from MZ, presumed to be Mark Zuckerberg, downloaded the work hosted by Library Genesis, one of the largest libraries of pirated work on the internet. And LibGen was already well known to publishers. They've tried to shut the site down before. A group of publishers actually sued the site, and the court ruled in their favor, ordering them to pay $30 million USD in damages. That fine remains unpaid to this point.
And we'll be looking at how that story is affecting Australian authors very soon here on Arts in 30. Now, Justin Baldoni's back in the news this week with yet another lawsuit.
Justin Baldoni is currently involved in a series of high-profile legal cases with Blake Lively after Lively accused him of creating a hostile work environment because of his inappropriate conduct. And for the full background on that story, make sure you check out last week's episode of Arts in 30 on the ABC Listen app, where we went into it in some detail. But now, Baldoni has added another lawsuit to the collection, suing his former publicist, Stephanie Jones. Jones had already sued Baldoni for breach of contract after Baldoni left her firm, Jones Work, shortly into a year-long deal. But now, according to Variety, the Baldoni lawsuit claims that Jones plotted a revenge campaign against Baldoni and her former colleague, Jennifer Abel, as they both announced their plans to exit Jones Works, and that she turned over messages from Abel's phone to the New York Times, who used it to write their original article on the story last year.
Wow. What else is making news this week?
In France, Gérard Depardieu's trial has begun after delays due to the actor's health. Depardieu is charged with sexually assaulting two women during the 2021 shoot for Jean Becker's film The Green Shutters. Now, around 20 women have accused the actor of improper behaviour, but several cases are impossible to prosecute because of the statute of limitations, and this is the first case to make it to court. Yuval Abraham, the co-director of the Oscar award-winning documentary No Other Land, has claimed on X that his Palestinian co-director, Hamdan Bilal, was attacked by Israeli settlers in the West Bank, leaving him with injuries to his head and stomach. And according to Haaretz, the ambulance that arrived for Bilal was then stopped by soldiers who were members of a rapid response unit composed of settlers from nearby settlements, and Bilal was removed. His whereabouts are currently unknown at the time of recording. Locally, the Art Gallery of New South Wales has announced that Maud Page will be their next director, making her the 10th director in the gallery's 154-year history and the first woman to take on the role.
Yay!
Indeed. Page is currently the deputy director and director of collections, and before that she was the deputy director and senior curator of Pacific Art at Quagoma in Brisbane. In America, Keith E. Sonderling, the new director of the Institute of Museum and Library Services, has pledged to, quote, restore focus on patriotism. This follows an executive order from the US President Donald Trump, which announced his intention to dismantle or at least significantly curtail the agency, which is responsible for hundreds of millions of dollars of grants to cultural institutions in the US.
It's a bit like Creative Australia, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's very similar. Supports libraries, supports museums, supports a whole range of cultural institutions. Their funding details aren't clear yet, but it's not looking good. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in slightly lighter Trump news, he has announced his unhappiness with the portrait of himself that is currently hung in the Colorado State Capitol building, saying on Truth Social that, quote, "Nobody likes a bad picture or painting of themselves, but the one in Colorado, in the state capitol, put up by the governor, along with all the other presidents, was purposefully distorted to a level that even I, perhaps, have never seen before." And Mariah Carey and Walter Afanasieff have won a court case against Andy Stone and Troy Powers over their song "All I Want for Christmas Is You." Powers and Stone wrote an earlier song with the same name and had claimed that their song, quote, "contains a unique linguistic structure where a person, disillusioned with expensive gifts and seasonal comforts, wants to be with their loved one." However, during the case, one expert witness found that the two songs share only five words: mistletoe, Santa Claus, snow, stocking, and Christmas. And in the ruling, the judge said that the phrases referring to the holiday season, "All I want for Christmas is you," and "underneath the Christmas tree," were part of the holiday vocabulary long before either of the songs were written.
This is Arts in 30, and you're with me, Daniel Browning, on Radio National. As we reported at the top of the show, documents released as part of a court case have shown that Meta has intentionally used a vast trove of copyrighted material to train their big language model without permission from the creators or rights holders. The company accessed the work that had been uploaded to the website Library Genesis, one of the largest libraries of pirated work on the internet. It has previously been revealed that OpenAI also accessed material on that website, although they claim they did not use the material to train ChatGPT. Many Australian authors have found their work has been caught up in this latest case, including Jennifer Mills, who's also a director of the Australian Society of Authors. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, what was your reaction when you found out that your work was included in this latest case?
Well, I saw the story on social media and went straight to the website and looked up my name. And I was shocked to see three of my novels were there on the list and felt a little bit helpless at first and really upset because, you know, we've long suspected that our work is being used in this way. And a lot of us know that our work is being pirated. But it's just horrifying to see these companies admit in court that they are using stolen goods, essentially, that they made a choice to do this. And it's very insulting, you know. You spend 4 or 5 years working so hard to get every sentence right in a book, and for somebody to treat that material as just expendable product with no human attached is heartbreaking and it's offensive.
And you're also financing your writing in many cases. You pay for the luxury of spending 5 years writing a book. You're doing it because you've got another job probably. So the expense too that you go to write a book. I mean, I only discovered that when I wrote a book. It's like, oh my God, no one pays you to do this stuff.
Nobody pays you to do it, Daniel. And the economy is already really, really hard on authors. Mm-hmm. So Australian authors have an average income of $18,000 a year. Mm. I do write full time. I make about $40,000 a year. I've never earned more than the minimum wage, and I often earn less. So there's already a huge amount of pressure on us as creators to make a living from our work. And this is just making things a whole lot worse and a whole lot harder.
Now, would you have approved the use of your work in this way if it had been properly licensed?
Well, it would depend on what sort of fee was being offered. It's hard to say hypothetically what I would have done because we're dealing with a situation where this has been done without our permission, without our consent, mm-hmm. and with very little transparency. So these companies were only finding out about this because it came up in court. These companies are operating with no transparency for the most part. They're not interested in paying compensation to us. And if they did offer, like recently happened with Black Ink, when they do offer authors an option to, you know, be paid a percentage of a licensing fee, it's often happening between the publishing company and the AI company or the tech company. And so authors aren't directly involved in those negotiations. And so in terms of like looking at our book contracts or our agreements with publishers, we have to be very, very careful about what we're agreeing to at the moment. And it's changing really rapidly.
Now, you mentioned that Black Ink, when they approached their writers, the Australian Society of Authors said that asking for blanket permission for all future licensing, particularly with only days to sign, is unnecessary and unfair. What's the appropriate approach between authors and publishers when it comes to negotiating rights like these, do you think?
Well, I think it's still very much in flux, but the right thing to do is to have clear and open communication, to negotiate on a case-by-case basis, I think, where possible, with these licenses, and to ensure that authors can have some ongoing benefit from these agreements. We're often being asked to sign away all future rights for one payment or one contract, and it's completely unfair. You know, we should be, if this can be used to generate an income for authors, it could be a positive thing. But at the moment, we're not seeing any benefit from it at all. So it's purely just theft of our work.
Mm. I mean, obviously, it's a serious breach, wholesale copyright infringement of not just your work, but, you know, thousands, many thousands of authors. I mean, you talked a little bit about the why this is so egregious, but what other harm and kind of impact do you see from Meta taking this kind of action? I mean, this wholesale copyright infringement.
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about the downward pressure on authors' incomes. I think the disrespect to creative workers will have wholesale effects that, well, I think are intended. You know, I think crushing the creative economy is part of the agenda here, let's be real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they might pay lip service to supporting creativity, but that's the opposite of what they're doing. There's other issues here that feed into this, like Indigenous cultural intellectual property, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens when an AI company is able to replicate or fabricate Indigenous cultural material? Mm-hmm. If some of these authors in this database have passed away, some of them are writing in language. You know, is it appropriate for these AI companies to be able to use that material? I don't think it is. I think that writers and creators, especially First Nations writers and creators, need to be protected from that.
Mm. Do you think that, I mean, when you think of these big AI companies and these models and the kind of potential benefit, I mean, ChatGPT, for example, I mean, it probably used a whole range of models, but we don't precisely know what published writing was used in the creation of ChatGPT, I don't think. But can you see any benefit where perhaps the harm might be ameliorated?
There's a couple of class action lawsuits happening in the US at the moment that are testing the fair use copyright law. Mm-hmm. And if those class action lawsuits are successful, these are run by authors and through the US Authors Guild. If they're successful, then there will be some kind of licensing arrangement likely. For Australian authors, it's a bit tricky because we don't have to sign up to these class actions. Mm-hmm. In fact, many of us can't sign up to these class actions because it's not something that's happening in Australia, it's happening offshore.
Yes, of course, offshore, yeah.
And so we're in a position where we're waiting for the results of a court case in another country to decide on our legal rights. Meanwhile, I think the government has the power to act. So that's what the ASA is asking for, is essentially some rigorous AI legislation to protect creators, some kind of mechanism by which creators can be compensated for their work, the usage of their work in this way. You know, we can't act Individually, we're unlikely to see any benefit directly in the short term, and often we have no legal recourse for this, but that doesn't mean that we're powerless to act. We have a government that can legislate. We have precedent for mechanisms that can work in terms of copyright payments or, the media bargaining code, news media bargaining mm-hmm. code. There's precedents for this. There's ways to work it. That's for the government to work out. The cases in the US are testing fair use, which is legislation that they have there, saying, well, if I have this kind of fair usage of your work, I don't have to compensate you. Yes. And in Australia, we have a slightly stricter version of that, which is called fair dealing, which has a stronger restriction. So there's a stronger need to compensate creators. So even if the authors don't win in the US, we still need legislation here to protect us.
Jennifer, thanks so much for being my guest here on Arts in 30.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's Jennifer Mills, the author and a director of the Australian Society of Authors. Her latest novel, Salvage, will be released this May. You're listening to Arts in 30 on ABC Radio National. I'm Daniel Browning. Last week, Noongar Woora writer and artist Auntie Wanda Gibson won the Children's Prize for Literature and the Victorian Prize for Literature at the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards for her book, Three Dresses. It's the first time that the winner of the Children's Prize has also taken out the major $100,000 award. Auntie Wanda, welcome and congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, the story in this book came out of your own history at Hope Vale Mission. Can you tell me a little bit about Hope Vale and your time when you were a young kid?
Well, Hope Vale, it's a beautiful little place, but it was run by the Lutheran Church, and in our time it was good, although it was hard in most ways, but it was good and enjoyable.
Now, every Christmas you were given three dresses. What did those dresses mean to you as a young girl?
Oh, those clothes meant a lot to me because we couldn't go to cook then to buy dresses, or we didn't have money to buy dresses. And those clothes were sent up by the Lutheran Church to give to the community, who every person got it in the community at Christmas Eve. And they were three dresses, three undies, and the men got shirt and trousers, but in threes.
Now, the story's not just about the dresses. It's about the holidays you took with your family. Now, you walked for 2 days to get to the beach. What were those times on the beach like for you? And what do you remember most about the country and about your family?
The country, we're good. The only problem that I had was getting cramps along the way. That's why we had to camp 2 nights along the way, so that my family can give me a spell from walking. And when I got real tired, my dad would put me on his shoulders
and carry me. Bless. So what were you getting cramps from?
I don't know.
Just from walking, maybe.
Yeah.
Now, when did you start painting? About 15 years ago, I understand?
Yeah, after I finished raising my children and working. I worked 23 years over at the supermarket over here. And then when my husband died, the ladies asked me to go down to the culture centre. Mm. And I said, no, I'm not coming. I've got other things to do. But I decided to go down. And when I painted my first little picture, it wasn't even a foot long or whatever. A tourist walked in the culture centre down there and bought it, and that really made me excited. So I started painting more and started weaving.
And you're a master weaver too, aren't you?
Yes. And I didn't weave from childhood. I didn't learn. I just used to watch my mother-in-law and auntie weave. Make dilly bags. And when I went down to the culture centre, I seen the other ladies started to weave. So I sat down there and got grass and started weaving, and then it all came back in my mind how it was done.
Mm.
I weave dilly bag, birds, fish, porcupine, turtle, all those things. At night when I'm sleeping, my mind go over time trying to work out what to weave.
What next am I going to weave? Can I ask you about writing? When did you decide you wanted to write your story down?
Well, when I painted the pictures, I started dotting down what it meant to me and all that. And I didn't have anything to do with writing because I'm a bad speller and writer. Speller. So when Maggie and Claire rang me one day, they said they read my article at Magpie Geese.
That's a clothing label, Magpie Goose clothing
label.
Yeah.
When they rang me up from there, they said they read that article there and it was good for a children's storybook.
There you go. Not such a bad writer.
And then I told them that I had something written down. They asked me to read it to them, so I read it to them, and they said, "That's the one thing we want. Can you write a bit more on it?" So I wrote a bit more and sent it to them, and they said that was perfect, what they wanted. And that's how it all came about.
A lot of people agree. Now, this is the first children's book to win the overall prize at the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. I mean, it's a big deal. I know a lot of people are probably saying, oh, you know, but it actually is the first time in history that a children's book has won this major Victorian Prize for Literature. What do you reckon this story's resonated so much with the judges?
I really don't. I think it's the hardship that we had and, you know, we had to do with what we got. And that's what I said there. Be thankful with what you got. Because we didn't have anything. We didn't have toys or lollies or soft drinks or iPads and all that kind of thing, bikes. It's only happening now that when we got money. But in that time, we didn't have money, nothing.
But you had three dresses, didn't you, every Christmas?
Yeah, that was a joy to us.
Congratulations, and it's thank you for writing this story, because people are really eating it up, and people love these kind of stories. You know, when we tell stories from the old days, so thank you very much for sharing your story.
Thank you,
Aunty Wanda Gibson, and her book is called Three Dresses, and she's just won the Children's Prize for Literature and the Victorian Prize for Literature at the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. Now, every week here on Arts in 30, I'm joined by an expert from across the ABC's music networks to bring you the one track you should be listening to. And this week, Sarah Gladys from Triple J on Earth joins me. Sarah, welcome. What is our track of the week?
Hi, Daniel. I bring you a track from Northcote, Melbourne. It comes from an artist, a really young artist who goes by the name of Mika James.
And Mika, and it's a song called Nonna's Trolley. I want to know what Nonna's Trolley is. What's Nonna on about?
I'm so enthused by Nonna's Trolley. If you know the suburb of Northcote well, it's kind of full of yayas and nonnas running around. So I want to know what is in Nonna's Trolley. Is it pasta? What's she got in there? She's already making her own tomato sauce, so not sure.
Now, Mika is an artist that you found through Triple J Unearthed High in 2022. But let's backtrack a little bit. Remind us what Triple J Unearthed is all about.
I sure can. Triple J Unearthed is my love. I am one-fifth of the team that work there. And we're an initiative where any Australian artist can upload a song, an original song, to the platform, and we might play on Unearthed Radio. So we've got a digital radio station. We also have a website, so you can find new music on the website. And more than that, we just champion local communities and Australian artists. So one of the benefits of working where I work is that we see artists at their very early beginnings. It's really grassroots. And Mika James uploaded a song in 2022 to the Aneth website. It was called Witchy Woman, very Stevie Nicks inspired, very heavy guitars. And we fell in love with it so much that she became a finalist.
Now, can you intro our track of the week?
Sure thing. This is Mika James with Nonna's Trolley. You'll fall in love with it.
That was Nonna's Trolley by Mika James, our track of the week chosen by our music correspondent, Sarah Gladys. And that's all we have time for today, but remember that you can listen back whenever you want on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Arts in 30 is produced by Sky Kirkham. C. Benedict is our executive producer. Richard Gervin, our sound engineer. I'm Daniel Browning, and I'll catch you next time here on Arts in 30.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.